The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. First up from NFB.org, American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults. A special issue of The Future Reflections by Carol Castellano. From the editor, from time to time, leaders in the National Federation of the Blind are invited to review new devices designed to help blind people. On occasion, these innovations show great promise. Sometimes, however, despite the best of intentions, they reflect a limited understanding of the needs and abilities of the blind. In the letter below, Carol Castellano responds to the developer of an app and accompanying device meant to improve mobility for blind toddlers. Carol Castellano has served as president of the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children, NOPBC, and of Parents of Blind Children, New Jersey, POBN, J. She is the author of 4 books, including Making It Work and Getting Ready for College Begins in Third Grade. The device referred to in the letter below is designed as a wearable mobility device, which, as a sidebar, I read about last week, that would take the need for dexterity and precision out of the hands of the toddler and build it directly into the design. That, friends, is precisely the problem. The prototype device consists of 2 metal pipes with rollerball ends. The device is suspended from a waistband or vest. Between the rollerballs is a connecting pipe. The rollerballs and connecting pipe would roll out in front of the child. The device does not require the child to use his or her hands. Dear Dr. So-and-so, I am sorry to tell you that our organization cannot support the development and distribution of your mobility system for blind toddlers. We appreciate the intent of the project to create a developmentally appropriate mobility device that encourages free and safe movement. However, we feel that the benefits the device provides, such as next step warning and improvements in gait and speed, do not outweigh the negatives, following our main concerns. It seems that use of this device would delay the acquisition of actual cane skills, such as holding the cane, receiving tactile information directly into the hand and arm, and interpreting and responding to that information. It appears that the device would not encourage the exploration of services and the development of self-directed active discovery. For example, when a child is using a cane, he or she can reach down the shaft to explore and identify objects. The cane promotes an understanding of distance as the child reaches out in all directions, including up. The use of the cane also helps the child become aware of reflected sound. As the proposed device does not allow practice in these areas, it seems that the development of orientation skills could be delayed. Use of the device may develop certain adaptive skills, but not those associated with actual cane use. Another area of concern is our sense that the device seems to encourage passivity. It does not have to be held, and it puts the child in a kind of a bubble. In addition, because an adult must put it on the child and take it off, it creates an artificial barrier to the child's spontaneous movement and shifts ownership of the child's movement to the adult. The level of adult involvement that is required might delay the child's ability to monitor his or her own safety. It appears from the videos that in order to get close to an object the device touches, the child would have to turn to the side. This is a further concern. Would the child be able to sit down close to an object or person spontaneously? If a child plopped down to a sitting position on the floor opposite another child, would the front bar of the device hit the other child? An important question that is not addressed in the provided materials is when the child would outgrow the device and be ready for actual cane use. Since the device does not teach most cane skills, we fear that valuable time may be lost through its use. In conclusion, we feel that children who would make progress in the intended outcomes with this device would also make progress with regular instruction and practice in cane use. The device, therefore, seems to us unnecessary and possibly harmful, as it could delay the acquisition of critical cane skills. Please feel free to contact me if you would like to discuss any of the above. Sincerely, Carol Castellano, member of the Board, National Organization of Parents of Blind Children. Another article is about the Individualized Education Plan, IEP, by Paul Hostowski. From the editor, as coordinator of the Slate Pals program, which matches up K-12 students who want to exchange letters in Braille, I have noticed an interesting trend in recent years. More and more often, I receive Slate Pal requests from sighted students who have become fascinated with the Braille code. These kids study Braille in their spare time, become proficient at reading and writing, and want to practice by writing to kids who use Braille on a daily basis. Paul Hostowski is a strong proponent of Braille not only for blind people but for the sighted as well. In his day job, he works as an American Sign Language interpreter. He is also a highly recognized poet whose work has appeared in Carolina Quarterly, Shenandoah, Bellevue Literary Review, Atlanta Review, and many other literary journals. He has won a prestigious Pushcart Prize and has been featured on Poetry Daily and the Writer's Almanac. You can read a selection of his poems at paulhostowski.com. I'm not blind, but I am an avid Braille reader. I learned Braille years ago while working as a transcriber at the National Braille Press, and I've been reading it with pleasure, physical pleasure, ever since. I love reading with my fingers. I like the idea of touching the words. I know it's just a romantic notion. I mean, Braille readers aren't more in touch with the words than print readers, but I like it nonetheless. I used to worry that people who saw me reading Braille in public, on the subway or in a Starbucks, would think I was pretending to be blind. A sighted person reading Braille is, after all, a weird thing, wouldn't you say? But it doesn't have to be weird. In fact, I have a fantasy. I envision a world where blind and sighted people read Braille, just as deaf people and hearing people use American Sign Language, ASL. ASL is taught today in high schools and colleges all over the United States. People think ASL is cool, and they want to learn it. Sign language has made a comeback. Well, Braille is cool too, and it's high time that Braille made a comeback. For a long time, I was in the closet about my Braille reading. If I ventured out in public with my Braille, I would read it furtively, sort of cloak and dagger, Braille in coat pocket. I'd keep the Braille pages inside my jacket or deep inside my knapsack, fingering the dots clandestinely, feeling vaguely illicit about the whole thing. At the Starbucks, for example, I would build a little fort on the table around my Braille magazine, cup of tea, laptop, water bottle, phone. I built ramparts surrounding the treasure of the dots, hiding the Braille so that no one would see me reading it and mistake me for a blind imposter or a blind wannabe. I am not a blind wannabe, but I do love Braille. It's a beautiful thing. Some would say it's a beautiful dying thing. That's why I say it's time for Braille to make a comeback, among blind people as well as sighted people. ASL has made a comeback because beauty and value were finally recognized. It's popular now. It's in. By some estimates, there are more hearing people who know how to sign than there are deaf people. ASL is cool, but I maintain that Braille is even cooler. I know both, so I'm qualified to judge. Braille isn't a language, true, but it encompasses all languages. It can adapt to and contain any written language on the planet. Blind people who know Braille, 10% in the United States is the bleak estimate I have heard, are blessed to know it. Most of the 90% who don't know Braille wish they did. Sighted people, too, are fascinated by Braille. It's a secret code to them, and they feel the urge to crack it. They look at it, touch it, turn it upside down and right side up, baffled by the inscrutable configuration of dots, wondering how it all works. Actually, the original tactual reading code was invented for the sighted, not for the blind, back before it was even called Braille. It was invented by a retired military man. He called his system night writing, and he tried to sell it to the French military as a method for passing messages in the dark. The full story is in the beautiful book published by the National Braille Press, Louis Braille, A Touch of Genius, by Michael Mellor, M-E-L-L-O-R. Since so many blind people and sighted people would love to know Braille, let's give it to them. Let's start a movement. A Braille is cool movement. Let's teach Braille to blind people and sighted people, offering it as an elective right alongside ASL, touting the joys and benefits of Braille, of which there are many, too many to list here, not only for blind readers, but for sighted readers too. Another issue about Braille by Robert Gardner, reprinted from the Illinois Independent. When the NOPBC NFB discontinued the National Braille Readers or Leaders Contest in 2012, a gap was created in the lives of students and teachers across the country. In this article, Robert Gardner explains how states in the Great Lakes region have worked together to keep the contest alive, and he ponders the importance of the contest as a means of developing future leaders. How do we get more young people involved? We need more youth to keep our organization going. Whether you're active in your church, Kiwanis, or a local book club, undoubtedly you have heard these sentiments. We in the National Federation of the Blind are no exception. Often we express these concerns in our local chapters and state affiliates. Hang on to that thought and let's switch gears. Let's talk about Braille for a moment. Specifically, let's discuss Braille and blind children. For 29 years, the National Federation of the Blind held an annual contest called Braille Readers Are Leaders, BRAL, for students in grades K through 12. In 2012, the national contest was discontinued. The following year, the NFB of Illinois decided to organize its own statewide contest, known as Illinois Braille Readers Are Leaders, or iBraille. iBraille turned out to be a great success, with more than 30 kids taking part the first year. The Illinois contest was patterned after the former national contest, though the reading period was somewhat shorter. Each contestant was placed in one of five groups according to grade. The objective was for a contestant to read the most Braille pages in his or her category. Cash prizes were awarded to the top three readers in each group, and every entrant received a complimentary goodie bag of Braille-related gifts. Gifts included such items as slates and styluses, Braille calendars, Braille rulers, and gift certificates from Seedlings and National Braille Press. In 2015, the iBrawl contest was expanded to include Minnesota. iBrawl became LOL 2 for Land of Lincoln and Land of Lakes. Then, for the 2016-17 contest, the NFB of Illinois invited all of the eight states bordering the Great Lakes to get involved. As one might guess, the contest is now called the Great Lakes BRAL Contest for Kids. It isn't an overly imaginative name, but it's certainly descriptive. Here's a question for you. Can you name the eight states that touch one or more of the Great Lakes? If not, read on for the answer. It's easy to see the primary objective of this contest, to promote the reading of Braille at a young age. In particular, the contest aims to promote the reading of Braille for recreation. If a child reads Braille for fun, Braille will become a natural part of his or her life at school and at home. Later, Braille will be a tool in his or her career. We all know that learning and using Braille at an early age results in greater Braille fluency later in life. We also see many immediate benefits of our BRAL contest. After the close of the contest, one teacher of the visually impaired wrote, "As I was walking into my school building last week, your email came through, and I was excited to share with my students that their prizes were on the way. When I got to Ava's classroom, there she was, opening her treats already. Both Shane and Ava were very excited to get their packages, especially at school, in front of their peers. They are thrilled with the coupons to select and buy Braille books. Shane has to complete some end-of-the-quarter testing. Then I am going to let him make the call to redeem his free book as a reward. Always have to push those independent skills." Skipping forward, the contest can create a surprising amount of interest and a surprising amount of competitiveness among the kids who take part. One mother wrote at the end of the recent contest, "Attached is Matthew's reading log. I don't think he slept much over the last couple of weeks. I kept finding him awake in the middle of the night reading some more. Thanks." After being notified that her daughter was a winner in her grade category, another mother wrote, "Thank you so much. Mariam is thrilled. She worked so hard on doing extra reading. Thank you for the program. It really encouraged her to have some fun reading and not view it as just work." It's not unusual for some children to read 3,000 pages or more during the 7 weeks of the contest. In the 2016-17 competition, Anthony Spears, a seventh grader from Illinois, read more pages than any other contestant. Anthony, who goes by LT, read an amazing 4,015 Braille pages. He wrote to us, "Thank you for letting me be in the BRAL contest this year. I like the challenge of reading against other students. Thank you for inviting me to the state convention. I will talk to my parents about it. I hope I can come, and it would be a pleasure meeting all of you too." Now let's get back to our original question. How can we, the NFB, attract more young people to our organization? The answers to that question are many, complex, and sometimes debatable. But one thing has become apparent to those within the NFB of Illinois who have organized and administered these BRAL contests. The vast majority of children entering the contest have had no previous connection with the National Federation of the Blind. In other words, the BRAL contest is their first exposure to the NFB. As the Great Lakes BRAL contest for kids continues, we see ourselves reaching children on two levels. We are encouraging them to read Braille and to increase their Braille skills. We are also introducing them to an organization, the National Federation of the Blind, that can benefit them in countless ways. Without really planning to do so, we have opened new horizons for blind kids by sparking their interest in a Braille reading contest. If not now, maybe later, maybe when they become adults, these children will remember the National Federation of the Blind. Were you able to name the 8 states bordering the Great Lakes? Going from west to east, they are Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and New York. For reference, the excerpt above about Matthew was from his mother, Karen Leinart, of Illinois. The words about Mariam were written by her mother, Colleen Samura, of New York. The wonderful letter about Ava and Shane came from Sherry Kennedy, a TVI in Ohio. In conclusion, the administrator of the Great Lakes BRAL contest, Deborah Kent Stein, says thanks to all who were involved in the Great Lakes Braille Readers or Leaders contest this past year. It was an adventure putting together a coalition of 8 states to participate in the contest. But all the work was worth it when you learn that more than 16,000 Braille pages were read by the kids altogether. Congratulations to every one of the contestants. For further information about the contest, visit www.nfbofillinois.org/great.lakes.braal.contest. Here's an email I received from the Disability Rights North Carolina May 1st Disability Rights Conference. It's on Olmsted Now in NC. Plenary speaker Bishop William Barber's powerful remarks. Over 300 people committed to disability rights convened, connected, and activated at DRNC's May 1st, 2024 Advocacy Conference. The plenary session featured a compelling conversation between Bishop William Barber II and DRNC CEO Virginia Knowlton Marcus, covering Bishop Barber's disability discrimination experience at a Greenville movie theater in December 2023. There's a hot link recapping that event. The stark realities disabled people face in our state 25 years after the Supreme Court ruled the discrimination and segregation of people with disabilities violates the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, the intersection of disability, race, and poverty, and more. Watch this enlightening discussion on the progress and challenges in the pursuit of racial and disability justice. There's a button to press for that video. 2024 DRNC Conference Recap. Heartfelt thanks to all our guests and presenters who made DRNC's 2024 annual conference a tremendous success. We are pleased by the rave reviews and thank all whose presence and hard work made it great. If you missed our event, check out these photos and conference materials and save the date for next year's conference, May 14th, 2025. And there's a hot link button for that information. Free webinar, NC Medicaid Managed Care. Transition to Tailored Plans, What Families and Advocates Need to Know, May 21st, 2024, noon to 1 p.m. Upcoming webinar, Medicaid for many North Carolinians with disabilities will drastically change on July 1st, 2024, with the transition to tailored plans. This webinar will review the transition to tailored plans, highlight how the enrollee experience will be different, and identify potential problems and advocacy opportunities. There will be time for questions at the end of the webinar, but questions are also welcome in advance. Find out more below. There's a sign-up button for that webinar. In case you missed it, recent news. May 3rd, 2024, WFAE, how North Carolina hopes to cut the waits for state psychiatric hospital beds. Hot link. April 28, 2024, The News and Observer, meet Samantha R. Her legal victory may improve behavioral care for thousands in NC. There's a hot link for that. I think I read that to you. April 28, 2024, The Daily Tar Heel. Organizers file lawsuit against the NCDHHS about prolonged jailing of people with disabilities. April 25, 2024, Disability Rights North Carolina fighting to combat opioid crisis in NC jails and prisons. There are hot links for each of those articles and another hot link to read more about each. From DisabilityScoop.com, Feds move to increase accessibility for people with disabilities online. More than 30 years after the Americans with Disabilities Act took effect, federal officials are imposing first-ever rules clarifying how the law applies online. The U.S. Department of Justice said this month that it will finalize a rule outlining technical standards for websites and mobile apps under the Title II of the ADA. The regulation applies to online offerings from state and local governments, which can include everything from public transportation and voter registration to emergency services, schools, healthcare providers, and tax authorities. This final rule marks the Justice Department's latest effort to ensure that no person is denied access to government services, programs, or activities because of a disability, said Attorney General Merrick B. Garland. By issuing clear and consistent accessibility standards for state and local governments' digital content, this rule advances the ADA's promise of equal participation in society for people with disabilities. Many websites remain inaccessible to people with disabilities, and the Justice Department has faced pressure for years to issue regulations specifying how the ADA applies online. Until now, however, the agency has only offered guidance. That has left the space wide open to litigation, as more and more facets of life have shifted online, particularly during the COVID-19 pandemic. So much of life today takes place on the web and on apps. It is a modern public square, said Maria Town, president and CEO of the American Association of People with Disabilities. This rule is a long-awaited recognition that to achieve equal participation in society as promised by the Americans with Disabilities Act, we must address digital discrimination and inaccessibility. The Justice Department rule stipulates that web and mobile apps should follow a standard known as Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, or WCAG. Version 2.1, level AA, to address accessibility for those relying on screen readers, speech recognition software, captioning for videos, visual contrast, and more. The requirements apply even if a third party creates or updates a web page or mobile app for a government entity, officials said. Though some content, primarily archived and certain pre-existing information, will be exempt. It is important that state and local governments can prioritize so they can choose the most important content, like current or commonly used information, to make accessible to people with disabilities quickly, the Justice Department said. The rule is expected to be published in the Federal Register soon and will take effect 60 days later. At that point, state and local governments will have 2 or 3 years to come into compliance with the regulations, depending on their population. Read more stories like this one. Sign up for Disability Scoop's free email newsletter to get the latest developmental disability news sent straight to your inbox. I found an ad from Strap.tech for a device called ARA, ARA, Smart Mobility Aid for the Blind and the Visually Impaired. ARA is a smart device developed for the blind and visually impaired to move faster and safer in their everyday life. We believe in the fusion of data-driven insights and user-centered design. Walk safely, 80% reduction on mid and upper body impacts. Move confidently, 30% decrease in injury risk. Build your pace, 19% improvement on walking speed. Go further, 11% increase in walking distance. Meet ARA. ARA is a fusion of thoughtful design and cutting-edge innovation. Crafted as a chest harness with adjustable straps, it's designed to fit most body types comfortably. At its center lies a central core that securely houses an array of advanced sensors, each meticulously positioned for specific levels of obstacle detection. There's a hot link to find out how it works. Real-time obstacle detection. Using its array of sensors, ARA scans the environment in real time, identifying potential obstacles in the user's path, and provides accurate and timely alerts through haptic vibration patterns. Intuitive haptic feedback. ARA's intuitive haptic feedback adapts to your movements, offering real-time guidance based on obstacle location. White cane mode. ARA's white cane mode is crafted for seamless integration with traditional mobility aids like white canes and the companionship of guide dogs or loved ones. Smart on-off. Recognizing the importance of battery conservation, the device employs a smart on-off feature. If you remain stationary for an extended period, engage in a face-to-face conversation, or take a seat. ARA intuitively powers down. There are hot links to learn more, hot links to buy, order, and there are menu drop-downs about the ARA experience, testimonials about us, onboarding, and Spanish. I often read profiles and research from the foundation fightingblindness.org. That website is fightingblindness.org. There are two chapters in North Carolina. Here are the blurbs about them. Charlotte chapter. We are actively recruiting leadership in the Charlotte chapter. For more information, please reach out to Chelsea Warr, W-A-R-R, at C-W-A-R-R at fightingblindness.org. The strength of the foundation is through our communities. The Foundation Fighting Blindness Chapter Network brings people together across the country to join in fighting blindness, blinding retinal diseases. Our family of volunteers and leaders stand up for those impacted by blinding diseases. From day one, they share the latest research and advancements and provide access to local resources to guide individuals through their personal journey. And together, they celebrate the foundation's mission. We are winning thanks to the dedication of our chapters, focusing on three key areas: education, resources, and revenue. Through informative sessions, foundation staff, community, and national experts provide research information, low vision resources, and outreach to our local retinal specialists and eye care professionals. To continue accelerating our mission, each community is invited to be a stakeholder by participating in our fundraising events. The Foundation Fighting Blindness Chapter Vision. Our vision is to bring a community together to end blinding diseases. The other chapter is the Triad Triangle chapter, with much the same content on their blurb. In 1971, Gordon and Lulie Gund, G-U-N-D, along with Bernard and Beverly Berman and several other committed families, co-founded the Foundation Fighting Blindness to fund research finding treatments and cures for blinding retinal diseases. Lulie did not only want further retinal research, but she also had the vision to provide vital resources and support for those in the blindness and visually impaired community. In 1972, Lulie created and became president of the Princeton, New Jersey chapter, overseeing it for 48 years. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Vision News. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Please call 919-832-5100.